Jackson, Liam, Noah, Grayson, Lucas, Mason, Oliver, Elijah. If you live in America around 2023 AD, those are the most popular names for newborn boys. Apparently, if you lived in Cana 2023 BC, Onan, and Shelah were cool choices. So according to the Bible, that's what a husband and wife named their three sons, Onan, and Shelah. And when their oldest boy had grown up, the father went out and got a wife for him. Don't know exactly how he did that. Maybe Tinder, eHarmony, Match.com. I'm pretty sure it wasn't Christian Mingle. You'll see why in a minute. Anyways, this young man, gets married, starts doing life together with his wife, and all of a sudden he dies. And according to the Bible, he dies as a punishment from God. And we say, whoa, what did he do? How did Why did God put him to death? I mean, that is so abrupt. We just met him. We didn't even have time to send a wedding present. What in the world is going on here? Why would God strike this man dead? Don't know. All the Bible says is that he was wicked in the Lord's sight. But what's that old saying? The apple never falls far from the tree. Let me tell you about Ur's dad. You might have heard of him. His name is Judah Jacobson. Do you remember Judah? Jacob had 12 sons. The first four were Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. This is Judah. All those brothers hated their younger brother who got the Technicolor dream coat, and they ripped it off of him, and they threw him in a pit, and they dipped the coat in blood, and they planned to tell the dad, you got killed by an animal, I don't know. But Judah was the brother, one of those guys, who came up with the idea that instead of killing Joseph, they would sell him. Yeah, they could make money. That guy, Judah, who had some serious moral failings of his own, he is the dad of And had some moral failings to the point where God killed him. Apparently, like father, like son, dies. Judah has lost his son. Tamar, who is the wife, is now a young widow. And widowhood is always bad, but back then it was especially challenging because ladies back then couldn't go to school, they couldn't get jobs, they couldn't support themselves. Girls back then depended on their fathers until they got married, then they would depend on their husbands until they died, and then they would depend on their sons. But now, because Tamar's already been married, it's way less likely anybody's going to ask her to be married again. So God came up with a rule to protect widows. It's called leveret marriage, leveret. It's from the Latin word lever, which means brother-in-law. When a husband died, according to God, if there were no children yet, the brother of the dead husband would marry his widow. And they would have kids until they had a son. And that son would grow up as the heir of the first brother who died, and he would get the estate, and he would provide for his mom. So after died, Judah told his second son, Onan, to take Tamar as his wife and do his duty. But Onan, the second son, said, no way, I'm not going to do that. I don't care about my brother's legacy. That wouldn't help me at all. I'm not going to do it. No. And because Onan wouldn't have kids with Tamar like he should, God called him wicked and killed him too. Now Judah is down two sons. He has a third son, Shelah, who is legally required to be given to Tamar as her husband. And Shelah should father a child with her to carry on the family's name. But Judah doesn't want to risk his third son. He's blaming Tamar for his first two sons' death. He thinks it's her fault. Did you hear about the old guy in the hospital? He's in his hospital bed and he's talking to his wife, Martha. He says, Martha, you have always been with me, come what may. All of my life, you have been there. No matter how rough life gets, through my broken leg in college, through our car wreck, through when our house burned down, Martha, you were always right there by my side. When lightning hit me that one time, when we went bankrupt, when our dog died, you were always right there with me. And now, this heart attack, and Martha, here you are holding my hand. Martha, I'm starting to think you're bad luck. Judah didn't want to admit that his sons were bad guys. Who would? So Judah made up a story in his mind. He said, Tamar is bad news. She is cursed, and she has cost me two sons. Now, that wasn't true. That wasn't right. When things go badly, we want to blame somebody. And Judah chose to blame Tamar. He said, I am not giving you... Shelah's a little young for you to get married right now. Why don't you just go home to your parents' house? Yeah. You go, and we'll call you when our son is ready. How about that? And because she had no way else to support herself, that's what the girl did. And that's where we pick up the story that Earl read for us. Great story. Let's fast forward a few years. Tamar, the girl, realizes that her father-in-law is never going to let her marry the third son. Never. He has cheated her out of a husband. But she hears that Judah's wife dies, and after mourning, she hears that Judah is taking off for Las Vegas with a friend. Tamar hears that, and she heads towards Las Vegas herself with a plan to get even. She finds out where Judah is staying. She finds out where her father-in-law is staying. She poses as a prostitute, and she gets propositioned by Judah. And we say, what? What? But as the daughter-in-law, she knew his proclivities. She knew what Judah liked to do, and she was angry, and this was her plan. When Judah sees her in Las Vegas, she's disguised. He hasn't seen her for a long time. He's certainly not expecting to see her there. And he's in a place where stuff like this happens all the time. And he feels sorry for himself because his wife just died, so he's vulnerable. And he does not recognize his daughter-in-law. But it looks to him like she's doing business and would be interesting. So he goes up to her, and they settle on a price. But he doesn't have enough with him to pay, so she asks for some collateral. And he gives her his staff and his seal and his cord. Basically, what Judah did was hand his wallet over to her. And she sleeps with him. She sleeps with her father-in-law, hoping to get pregnant. And then she disappears. How's this for a story, huh? Later, Judah tried to find the mystery girl and pay her what he owed her and get his wallet back. But he couldn't locate her. And he said, oh, well, I tried. And he went on with life. 3 months later, he is told that Tamar must have slept with a man because she's pregnant. And Judah went crazy. She has no right to be pregnant. She has no right to be with anyone. She's part of my family, Judah says. Sleeping with someone she's not married to, that is so wrong. Plus, this proves what he has said all along. She's no good. Her fault that his sons went bad. It's her fault. His sons hadn't died because they were ungodly. It was because she was ungodly. And this just proved it because she's pregnant. It proves everything. Judah was so furious to the point of rage where he demanded that she pay the penalty for what she'd done wrong and be killed. Which in our translation, he said, bring her out and have her burned. But the Bible shows that he was so mad he could only say two words. He said, take, burn. Now back then, nobody got burned. That's torture. Even when people were executed back then, they didn't burn them. But Judah's been holding hatred in his heart against Tamar for a very long time. And when an opportunity for it to come out comes up, he vomits it all over the place. But as she's being dragged to the fire, she got somebody to deliver a package to Judah. She sent his wallet back to him. And she said, I'm pregnant by the owner of this wallet. Recognize it? The Hebrew word she used is hakernah. And it's like when we say, gotcha. Tamar doesn't mean, Judah, could you tell me who this belongs to? She means, really, dude? She means, you're having me burned for a sexual liaison that I had with you? She said, if I deserve to be thrown in the fire, so do you, buddy, so do you. She says, hakernah. Do you recognize this? Do you know what this means? Hakernah. Pretty much it's like Jewish smack talk. Like, now what are you going to do? And God is so tricky. That's probably not the right word. God is so poetic. It's so ironic. God is so genius. Judah had used this same word earlier in his life, the exact same word. Judah's father, Jacob, had four wives, and Judah's mom was not his favorite. So Judah was not his dad's favorite. Nope. His dad loved another wife more, and he loved her boys the most, which is why all of Judah and his brothers hated Joseph. And that's why they got rid of him. Like we saw last week, they sold him to traffickers. They took his precious coat. They killed an animal. They soaked the coat in blood. They ripped it to shreds so it looked like Joseph had lost an ugly battle with a lion or something. And then the boys had brought the bloodied coat to their dad, and they said, hakernah? Hey, Dad, we found this coat. Hakernah? Do you recognize it? What could it mean, Dad? And their father did recognize it and pretty much killed him when he thought that his son had been killed by an animal. And here's Judah sending Tamar to her death as a penalty for the wrong she had done. But then he suddenly realizes that he himself deserves the same penalty and probably more. He knew it wasn't Tamar's fault that his two sons had died. He really probably realized it was his fault for being a bad father. He knew he should have let her marry the third son so that there would be an inheritor to the estate. He knew he shouldn't have slept with a prostitute when he was in Las Vegas. He knew a lot of stuff. And when Judah saw his staff and his seal and his cord, he was suddenly very aware of his own mess. Hakernah? Yeah, he Hakernah, all right. Which is why he then said, "Stop, stop, stop. I am more to blame in all this than she is." Note, he did not say, "Tamar is innocent." She wasn't innocent. She had lied. She had had sexual relations with her father-in-law. She was not innocent. But Judah says, "She is more righteous than I am." The word for righteous is tzedek, tzedek, and it means just, lawful, good, appropriate. When kids think their siblings are getting more than they should, what do they yell? What do you yell when you think you're not? "That's not right. That's not fair. It's not supposed to be like this." A kid in Judah's family would yell, "That's not tzedek." And Judah says, "Tamar is actually more tzedek than I am in this case. She is more righteous than I am not." A light bulb went on in Judah's mind. He's had a come to Jesus moment. By returning the wallet, Tamar held a mirror up to Judah, and he saw himself. He saw himself for what he was, a bitter, immoral, controlling man. The person he had spent hating all these years, he realized he was actually worse than she was. Have you ever had a moment like that in life where you realize that something's really ugly on your inside, where you realize that you might actually be worse than the people you always called really bad? And maybe you've been like that for a long time, hiding it because you didn't want to look at it, even though you knew it wasn't right. You ought to deal with it. You just made up reasons why it was okay in your case. You never let yourself think about what you were doing too much, lest you have to deal with it. But then suddenly, somehow, God brings that out into the open, and there's no way around it. That is an embarrassing, painful, scary, challenging moment. And it's all part of letting Jesus train us to be better. There are a bunch of people in this church who have come clean on stuff in their lives. We've admitted we're addicted to cocaine. We're addicted to porn. We're addicted to wine, to food, to TV, to gambling. We love power. We love control. We've held grudges. We were selfish. We've had negative attitudes. We've been critical of everything. We are miserly. We've admitted we thought wrong thoughts. We've said wrong words. We were abusive parents. We cheated our employers. We cheated our government. We cheated our spouses. There are some people who, when they walk into our church building and hang out with us for a little bit, say, "Oh, John, these people here are so nice." And I think, well, okay. But a lot of us have had Judah-esque moments, and that's helped us. In the end, Tamar wasn't burned. In the end, Judah took her in to his family, and she gave birth to twins named Perez and Zerah. Perez is a word that means one who breaks out. And I thought this week as I was reading that, Roberto is so lucky, his name is actually defined in the Bible. One who breaks out. So I looked up the Bible to see if I could find my name. And I found it. And the definition, according to the Bible, of my name is one who walks. Less impressive. Perez means breaking out, one who breaks out. And I think Tamar means let's leave the past behind and let's head towards something new and better. And Judah did. And I have proof. See, later on in his life, Judah and his brothers are going to be begging for food in Egypt from, you'll never guess, from Joseph, the brother they sold. There are so many disguises. But the brother will be disguised there. They won't recognize him. This whole thing kind of sounds like a Mission Impossible movie, right? But they won't recognize the brother they sold into slavery because he's now king of the world. And they're begging for food from him. And Joseph decides to test them to see if they're the same jerks they were before. Joseph says, I think I'm going to keep your younger brother prisoner here in Egypt. And you guys can all go home. And Judah says, no, I can't do that again. Please, sir, take me, let my brother go. Judah had done something really painful and been exposed by Tamar, and it had changed him. And when Judah offered himself in the place of other, his brother knew that Judah was a different man. At which point in the story, Joseph will break. He can't pretend anymore. He told them who he was. After 22 years, he reveals who he is to them, and guess what word he uses? Hakarna? He says, do you recognize me? I'm your bro, Joe. And he forgave them. And he said, you meant to do me harm. God meant this whole thing for good. And that's the end of the story for today, except for takeaways. Takeaways, which are good both in soccer and in sermons. I have three takeaways today, two things that are pretty deep and one that is obvious but needs to be said. So here are some lessons that we can learn from this bizarre account of Judah and Tamar. Number one, to not help people with what they need in life when you can is a bigger sin than prostitution. Judah had the power in life to help Tamar, but he chose not to. He just sent her home. He had his reasons, emotional reasons, financial reasons, convenience reasons. He sent her away. He didn't do anything actively bad to hurt her. He just didn't help her. And to get back at him for that, Tamar resorted to prostitution and sexual entrapment. But when Judah got caught and he could see the whole thing clearly, he said, wow, what I did was way worse than what she did. Sometimes people say no sin is worse than any other sin. And I guess in a way that's true. All sin, any sin, according to the Bible, is a terminal disease. And in the end, they will all kill us. But it seems like some sins, to me, it seems like some sins are worse than others depending on the results. If you're thinking about murdering someone, and or you actually murder someone, both disqualify you from heaven. But thinking about murdering someone will mess you up in your heart, and it will ruin your relationships. But if you actually murder someone, then that person's dead. And to me, if I'm that person, or if I love that person, you killing them is far worse than you thinking about killing them. I think the fallout from some sin is wider than the fallout of other sins. Both are bad, but one's worse. Judah said when he had the ability to provide for a widow, but he abandoned her, he just left her there, he didn't help. That was actually worse than when she sold her body in exchange for revenge. So the Old Testament says that in God's kingdom we need to care for orphans and widows. The New Testament says that in God's kingdom we need to care for the sick and the poor and the lost. We are to care for people who are sick or poor or lost. So the Victor Farmington food cupboard is not optional for Willowbrook. Family Promise is not optional for Willowbrook. Mission support for people proclaiming Jesus all around the world is not optional for Christians. Those are chances for us to help people who need it, opportunities for us to use some of what we have to help people who don't. And when we do that, when we help people with what we have, then we're where God made us to be. One of my favorite Family Promise memories, do you remember when we used to have families come and live with us in our church building for a week? I was here for breakfast one morning, and I saw Bill Burns, the director of the whole thing, make peanut butter toast for some kids. Peanut butter toast. Looked bad to me. Looked bad to the little boy who ate it. But after he ate it, he leaned back in his chair, and he smiled, and he said, best toast ever. I think often in life we will help people who are in need, and they won't say thank you by saying thank you. They'll say thank you by asking for more. But I think every time we realize that we have a chance to care for people who need help and we take that chance, I think Jesus leans back in his chair and he says, best toast ever. Not helping people around you when you could, one of the biggest sins there is. So let's look for more chances and spots this week where we can help, and then let's help. Point number two, the moral of this story is that morals are never the story. Jesus in our place is the story. It is hard to read the tale of Judah and Tamar as an inspirational story. What she does is not the kind of thing we teach kids in our Bible school classes. According to the Bible, what he does is worse. So there's no hero in this story. So the moral of this story, like the moral of most Bible stories, is that living morally isn't going to do it. It'll never be, try really hard, be as good as you can, and God is going to judge you on the curve. Instead, the Bible always says, wow, you fail miserably. Good thing God loves you anyway. Here is Judah's arc in his life. Here is the father's arc in his life. His little brother didn't deserve to die. Judah said, I hope you die. Then Tamar became pregnant. He condemned her to death, rightfully so. She deserved to die. But then Judah made a decision. He said, in spite of your sin, in spite of the fact that you deserve to die, you don't have to die. You deserve it, but I won't demand it. And Judah gave Tamar her life back. And years later, Judah stood in front of Joseph and offered to pay for Benjamin's failings. Judah said, yeah, he deserves it. but I will pay for him. Judah went on to eventually become the leader of his family, the leader of the whole nation. They called the land they lived in Judea in honor of Judah. They called themselves Jews in honor of Judah. He eventually became one of their greatest ever because he figured God's deal out, which is greatness comes from giving yourself up for the good of others. And many, many years later, a great, 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 great grandchild of Judah would look at all of us and he would make a decision. And he would say, Jesus would say, you all deserve to die, but I will pay for you all. And at the cross, the one greater than Judah would give us our lives back. The first Judah was ready to punish his daughter-in-law for her sins. The last Judah offered to stand in her place and in yours. He took all the punishment there was to take. And that's what makes Tamar's story one of the greatest of all Bible accounts. Thank you for listening. We're almost done. Do you know where bad rainbows get sent? To prism. But don't worry, it's a light sentence. Do you know where you can weigh a pie? Somewhere over the rainbow. Weigh a pie. Do you know that meteorologists have figured out how to weigh a rainbow, and they've discovered it's pretty light? Okay, so the first two lessons from Judah's story are pretty heavy. This next one is not, well, at least it's not hard to understand. In fact, this, out of everything, might be the most basic point of this page of scripture. Are you ready? Application number three, never have sex with a prostitute because it might be your daughter-in-law. You didn't see that one coming as you drove in today, did you? Friday night, we're setting up for yesterday's Brazilian fair that we had here at our building. We had 250 Portuguese-speaking, green gold, jersey-wearing Rochester Brazilians in our building yesterday. But while we were moving stuff around on Friday night, someone accidentally pulled the fire alarm. And immediately in this building, there was a screeching alarm sound and a strobe-like flashing lights. And the person who did it was so apologetic, didn't mean to do that, but everyone evacuated the building, and our security system automatically sent the Fishers Fire Department trucks our way. And Mark Haggett, a fireman in our congregation, called me up and said, what's going on, John? Something happening at Willowbrook? Because we were on the radio. And while I'm waiting for the firemen to arrive, and that thing is blaring, I decide I'm going to at least turn it off while we're waiting. So I go to the lockbox, which surprisingly was locked. I didn't think we locked the lockbox, but I guess we do. Oh, well, I'll go get the key, I said. So I opened up our key box, and I looked through 30 keys. None of them were labeled lockbox. Well, it must be on the office desk. So I went there, and I looked there through the drawers. Not there, no key. The alarm's still blaring. I know I've seen that key somewhere. I've seen it recently. So I go back to the lockbox, still locked. I think, well, maybe on the desk in my office. I look there. I look in the drawers in my office. I look behind the desk in case it fell off. Not there. How about the Welcome Center? Yeah, that would make sense. It would be close to key in the lobby. Very nice. Nope, it's not on the Welcome Center, and the noise is starting to hurt my head. But the firemen have arrived, and they assess what's going on, and it turns out they carry B keys on the trucks with them for just such occasions. And they came in, and they opened it up, and they reset it and turned it off. Everything checked out. We were all good. They said, you don't have a key for this? I said, I really thought so, but I couldn't find it. He said, you might want to talk to your security people about that and get one. I said, for sure I will. And he left. Later that night, as I was about to leave, I walked back into the office to turn the lights off. And as I flipped the switch, I saw, pinned right there on the wall, few inches from the light switch, the key to the lockbox. Meaning, I see that key hanging there every day, many times a day. Meaning, during their fire alarm, I walked in and out 6 times of that at the office, and I did not see it. In the midst of a bunch of chaos and confusion, sometimes you can miss the most obvious fact. God says your sins will find you out, meaning you can't really hide anything in life, right? So just a word of warning, mostly for the guys in the room on this last point. If you think you can avail yourself of pornography and no one will ever know, that's what Judah thought. He availed himself of a prostitute's services and no one would ever know, right? Right, except for every person who's read the Bible in the past 3,000 years. We all know what he did. What's worse, we know who he did it with. And you may not have a daughter-in-law, but every girl who's being used in that industry is somebody's daughter. And that should make those of us who ponder pornography as a possibility so sick to our stomachs that we would do whatever it takes for us not to be part of that ever again. So come to think of it, though lesson three is obviously more obvious than lessons one and two, it's still kind of heavy, isn't it? But it's possible. It is possible to not do this. Maybe be like the guy who said, I was playing chess with my friend, and he said, let's make this more interesting. So we stopped playing chess. If, like Judah, you are using daughters wrongly, find some friends who have stopped and join them. Kind of weird, right? We started a sermon series last week in Genesis 37, all about Joseph. This sermon series is going to be about a 17-year-old talented kid who was daddy's favorite in a very messed up family. We're going to follow his story through 22 years of ups and downs, how God worked in his life. And the first page after he's introduced, no mention of Joseph at all. Instead, we read a graphic story of what a gross older brother in Joseph's family did, which is kind of like when you watch Jack Ryan. And it starts out with Jack being dragged into a dungeon and hung from the ceiling in chains with a hood on his head, and you think, oh boy, what's happening? And then the screen says, 5 days earlier. And you find out eventually how he got there. The story of Judah and Tamar shows us what kind of family Joseph came from. And this flashback into Judah's life will stand in stark contrast to what happens with Joseph next week when he is offered a chance to do something really fun and really wrong with his boss's wife. Starting next week, we will see why Joseph's life is such a good example for Jesus to learn from on how to do life and for us. I hope you'll come back and be part of this whole series, which we're calling Things Not Expected, which probably describes this sermon. Let's pray.